You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And welcome to another episode of Media Matters for Anfield Index. You can all breathe now, people. Yesterday's drama is done, but there is plenty to talk about, plenty to unpack. There's even a few things happening off the field. There's cup games coming up and the small matter even of a Manchester United game at the weekend, which seems a million miles away somehow, doesn't it? And here to talk through it, answer our questions with various ones we're going to pose to him as well today, is the renowned and the respected David Lynch. It's a weird feeling this morning, so I'll ask it as ever. How are we?
Yeah, I think good. I think there's a lot of positives to take, and you know, we'll get into this really in depth. But I just think the overriding feeling is, you know, you've got to have, I think, the supporters maybe feel some pride about the performance and almost feeling better about Liverpool's title chances. Even though, you know, a win would have been nice. It would have, you know, been really, really nice to open a gap to City. I still think the performance was so good that, you know, you can't come away feeling too disappointed. And I think, you know, it's so easy to accept the point on the basis that Arsenal have got to go to City very, very soon. I think that makes it a little bit more palatable, a draw, even if it is a home game. So I think very, very pleased with the performance I saw, and Liverpool looking in really good nick at the moment.
No doubt. So I did want to ask you that, because I know you said before, and you were always quite stern on it previously, that you felt we needed to win this really for the title. Did yesterday's performance sway you, change your mind at all in any way?
Yeah, I mean, I'd still now make City big favourites to win the league, because we know what they're like across these last 10 games. They tend to just hit another gear, don't they? They've got the track record of going on to win it. So I think for me to feel like Liverpool were favourites to the title from this point onwards, I think we would have had to win. So I don't quite make them favourites at the moment. But as I say, there were so many positives from the draw, and the performance was fantastic. And I think, you know, the key element really was to come out of this game feeling like Liverpool was still in the mix. I think defeat to City would have felt that, you know, it's going to be really difficult from here. But a draw in the end with, as I say, with Arsenal having to go to City so soon, and the fact that Liverpool are getting the other side of this now, they don't contest a Premier League game till March 31st now. And they should have maybe four or five back for that game. That feels massive, you know. So if Liverpool get the right result from that Arsenal City game, which is obviously either a City win or a draw, then the title's in their hands with loads of players coming back. You know, the squad hopefully looking stacked, and then it's 10 games to go and win the league. And they've got the better fixture list coming up as well. They've got the weakest teams on paper coming up. So, you know, it's not a bad position Liverpool are in at all. And I think that, you know, the disappointment almost yesterday, they didn't get the win that I felt that they deserved. But the overall picture is looking very, very healthy. And I'll be honest, I don't see Arsenal going to City and winning there. So I think this is going to be back in Liverpool's hands pretty soon. And hopefully with a, you know, quite as close as possible to a full squad, which is, you know, what a position to be in.
Absolutely unreal. I mean, we were both there yesterday. My voice is still feeling a little bit. For those that weren't, Anfield was raucous yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, I just love it in games like that. I just think there's, you know, it's so tied to what happens on the pitch and really feeds each off each other in a really nice way. Like, it's so different to the atmospheres that people talk about in German football, for example, that they say is, you know, they're fantastic atmospheres. Give me Anfield any day of the week. It's so tied to what's going on the pitch and sort of, you know, reacting to big moments. You know, a free kick given to Manchester City, even if it was absolutely deserved, they had the crowds up and angry and getting up, and there's the whistling every time City touched the ball, and Liverpool are on the attack, just making, you know, City feel nervous with the volume rises, and Pep Guardiola described it as a tsunami, didn't he, after the match? I thought it was a great way of putting it, and you know, the crowd absolutely played the part in that. They were phenomenal, and you know, that played a big part in City looking, you know, all at sea it for most of that second half. Liverpool were just swarming them. And that was as much down to the crowd as the performance itself. And as I say, the two things feed off each other, and it just comes to a crescendo where you can make Manchester City, who were, you know, I'd still argue the best team in the world, you can make them look like amateurs at times. And that's how good it was, the atmosphere.
Yeah, no doubt. That was the power of Anfield. And you mentioned that because they did look ordinary. I mean, how do you kind of split the performance a little bit, because I was nervous at the start in the opening minutes, I've got to be honest, but the longer it went on, the more confident I almost felt, but then I was worried about the sting in the tail. How did you kind of view it minutes through minutes?
Yeah, I thought first 10 minutes was City's best spell of the entire game. Like, the way they started that, I almost thought, look, Liverpool have got a lot of injuries here. Man City have learned a lot from coming to Anfield down the years. Is this the time that they finally sort of shake it off and they come and put in a dominant performance at Anfield and actually go on and win? And you know, I think they sort of slightly tailed off before they scored. But the fact they went ahead then through a clever set piece, you're thinking, this is all going for City here. That's, you know, fair play to them, by the way. That corner routine was brilliant, yeah. I thought. And, you know, in big matches, it's so good to have that up your sleeve. So to pull that one up, you know, fair play to them. And I thought once he got the nose in front and they'd had the confidence of that opening 10 minutes or so in them, that, you know, maybe they could go on and control this and as I say, get the win at Anfield for the first time in front of fans. But, you know, the way Liverpool rolled back after that, I mean, I thought by the end of the first half, this has been absolutely even. I thought, you know, I thought it was a pretty even game with City having the nose in front off that set piece. But then second half, just a no contest, really. I thought Liverpool were all over them, you know, just completely controlled it pretty much from start to finish. I mean, City still had some moments in there, I think Doku striking the post particularly. But, you know, it was pretty much Liverpool, control from start to finish, really, in the second half. And they were the team who looked most likely to win it and were very unfortunate given the chances they had not to do it. So I think on the overall passage, you know, balance of play, that Liverpool were the better team. And I think, you know, that the XG shows that that Liverpool were pretty dominant in this, and the team that will come away thinking that, you know, not a bad point by any means, but probably deserve to get more than that.
Yeah, you're right. They had the moments, but I think it's quite telling when Pep takes Kevin De Bruyne off at Anfield to give them a bit more in midfield. I think that tells its own story of that second half more than anything. And I mean, this one, in a great way, there's contenders galore probably for this. Who did you give, or would you give personally, man of the match to?
Like you say, really, really tough, because I thought there were so many outstanding performances in there. I think there were very few Liverpool players you'd say didn't play fantastically well, really. So it's quite difficult to pick. I mean, I'm going to just run through a few that I thought were fantastic. I thought Virgil van Dijk was phenomenal. He is so good at the moment. I mean, it really is surely back to being the best centre back in the world. You know, he doesn't look anywhere short of what he was previously. He's been absolutely phenomenal. I thought he dominated Haaland yesterday, and it, you know, almost laughable at times how he kept him out of the game. And that one where they were one on one with each other,
yeah.
Haaland basically pass it into Queen Kelleher's hands from 20 yards out. It just sort of summed up how on top he was in that battle. And then I thought the midfield two of Endo and McAllister, they sort of seemed to work in a pivot at times. Again, ridiculously good. Really enjoyed their performance sort of everywhere, winning the ball, really sensible in possession. And then one person who I think probably get criticism actually for his performance is Luis Diaz. But I thought he's, you know, I know he missed some chances, but I thought he was a net positive to the team hugely. The balance he gives Liverpool with his defensive work rate, his ability to get the ball up the pitch. I mean, if he'd finished one of those chances and added one goal to his tally, he's man of the match by a million miles, in my opinion. So I wouldn't want to be too harsh on him, and I want to highlight how good he was. But again, I've mentioned those three players there, but I'm looking through them, like, you've got to mention Kwanzaa. Bradley was brilliant. Joe Gomez did really well. You know, there's so many good performances in there. But I think if I had to pick a man of the match with a gun to my head, for me, I would pick Alexis McAllister, I think. I think he's hitting another level recently. He just seems to have really, really settled in now at Liverpool. He was the dominant force for me in the entire game. Liverpool controlled that midfield, particularly in the second half. And Endo was a big part of that, don't get me wrong. But I think McAllister was the key man. His coolness in possession to bring City on and make them press and then find the gaps and pop the ball around. He's brilliant in the challenge. He scores the penalty so, so, so cool in a big situation. And should have won a penalty at the end as well. So I mean, we'll get into that. For me, Alexis McAllister, I think he's just playing an absolutely world-class level. And if Liverpool can keep him fit between now and the end of the season, I think he's going to have a big say in whether they win the title or not. I think he's arguably the most important player at the moment.
Yeah, on form now. I mean, 7 goal contributions in his last 7 games. And even like you say, that penalty, what I loved before, there was a big delay when Edison went down. He was just doing kick-ups in the middle of like the area, just sort of nonchalantly kicking it around. So, yeah, it's been unbelievable. And we've got to discuss it. We try and stay away from ref decisions. And I'm using your words a bit because I always agree with you. I always think you give the refs a fair shake, VAR and everything, the PGMOL. You try and look at it objectively. I'm struggling with yesterday. I'm not going to lie at all. The more and more I watch it back. I mean, Michael Oliver, the referee, doesn't give it. VAR checks Stuart Atwell. Mike Dean's comments, I'm sure you've seen. I'm sure you've seen Jurgen Klopp's comments on Mike Dean and the referees, etc. Honest thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's just a penalty, isn't it? It's absolutely a penalty. I just don't think, you know, I do try and be fair on the referees, but I think Michael Oliver will look back at that one and feel like he's made the wrong decision there. I mean, I do kind of feel for the ref in the sense that when you see the angle he's got, he's in a really good position, actually. But unfortunately, he's seeing McAllister's back, so he doesn't see the weight of the contact. It could, as far as he's concerned, maybe be a little brush. And now what goes against the referee in this situation as well is that he'll see, you know, he'll be able to, when he's talking over the mic, be able to see, OK, I saw a bit of a coming together, but I don't think it was enough to be a penalty. And then the bar is then set at such a ludicrously high level for them to... Basically, the VAR can only go and tell them to go and look at the screen if they think 100% we nailed on, it's going to be a penalty. You know, you very rarely see them sent and then they stick with the on-field decision. So because of the way that the VAR is built in that situation, I think it doesn't help the referees. I mean, Jurgen put it best really when it was put to him about that high bar. And he said, well, isn't the idea just to get the right decision? And it absolutely should be that, shouldn't it? You know, I know you want to avoid re-refereeing the game, but I think in that situation, it was just a clear penalty, really. And I just think, you know, in the 99th minute of the game, was it, you know, it's really hard for Michael Oliver when, as I say, he can only see McAllister's back and he can't see the contact to give that penalty in that situation in such a massive game. You know, I think years ago, you wouldn't have ever seen them give that because I just think, if he's not got the exact perfect view, then you would be reluctant because you don't want to decide where the title goes in this moment by giving the pen. But in that, he just should be helped out by VAR there. They should say, look, you can stick with your on-field decision if you want, but go and have a look at it because there is some contact there. And I mean, it doesn't matter. I think the justification from the PGMOL was that You know, Doku gets a little touch on the ball, which I think, he, watching replays, kind of hard to know whether he did or not. But even if he does, I think it's irrelevant. I think within the law there, there's a recklessness to his challenge. It's a high boot and it would get given anywhere else on the pitch. So I think, yeah, poor decision and sort of underlines some of the issues with the VAR, really, and that they're not there helping the refs or helping them. They're just thinking about this high bar too much and not re-refereeing the game. I just think in that moment, if they'd give Michael Oliver another chance to see that, he would have absolutely seen that it was a penalty and given it.
I mean, you know this story's going to rumble on and people are going to talk about it. I mean, we saw in the Sky studio, Jamie Carragher talk about, and I'm struggling to agree with this, if it's the 50th minute or the 60th it gets given, but it's not going to get delivered in the last minute, I'm kind of struggling to sort of process that. And Jürgen mentioned Howard Webb will probably ring him with an apology. Do you foresee that coming? Do you think there will be a phone call today?
I'll be quite surprised if that doesn't go down as a missed intervention. I really would. I just think there's just sufficient contact there, isn't there? I mean, I actually think it does hurt McAllister, the fact he gets caught as well. So there's clearly enough in it. I'd like to see the argument made that that is on the line of where the intervention should be. Surely not. It just is a clear penalty. I think every Manchester City fan that I saw online fit feels that they sort of got away with one there. I think even they would agree that it's a penalty. So, I do think that's going to be logged as a missed intervention. And if it's not, you know, I'd be more annoyed about it not going down as a missed intervention.
Right.
Because I'd rather them just accept that that is a penalty, because it just is, isn't it? You know, the amount of contact was there. And as I say, I got Carragher's argument in the sense that the referee himself, because he can't see the contact in the 99th minute, to give that, you'd have to be insanely brave, or, you know, it's almost reckless to give it if you don't see the actual contact full on, you know, with your angle. I totally get him not giving it. But the problem is then that, you know, VAR have got to, you know, jump through hoops then to feel like they're able to tell him to go and have another look at it. And that for me is a flaw in the system, and it's really cost Liverpool there, because it would have been great to win that one.
Yeah, definitely. It did not go for us. But listen, I mean, there's so many positives. I do want to sort of run through these, because there were some special performances. I mean, I can't believe how good everyone under 21 on the pitch was. And I do want to talk about these one by one. They were insanely good in a massive fixture. I mean, I'll be deadly honest. Like, you know, I messaged you when Konaté didn't make it. I'll use quite a strong word, a panic type of thing. But Jarrell Kwanzaa rammed my words back down my throat big time. He was outstanding yesterday, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, really, that, you know, you think that he was on loan in League One last season, and I don't, you know, only for half a season, and I don't think anybody could think then that he was going to be a big part of Liverpool's first team squad this season. I mean, you know, I'm not to say there wasn't a belief in him in the academy, but the steps he's taken this season, I think, have taken everyone by surprise, and absolutely even more so for supporters who maybe hadn't seen a lot of him. It's just got everything you need to be a top level centre half, hasn't he? I mean, he's always helped by the fact that Van Dijk's alongside him, and that, you know, that is quite handy there in terms of organisation. But, you know, in terms of the raw materials to be a top defender himself, he's absolutely got that. He's not the quickest, but he's no slouch. His positioning's great, physically good, wins his headers, composure on the ball. I mean, he almost actually caught him out at one point, didn't he, when he got the ball knocked off him. But, you know, fair play to him. That's going to happen sometimes when you're as composed as he is and you're trying things. You're going to make mistakes from time to time, particularly when you're younger. You maybe pick the wrong moments to dwell on the ball. But he just got absolutely everything in his locker. And, you know, as much as Van Dijk completely shut down Haaland yesterday, Kwanzaa had to get through a lot of work with him as well, because he wasn't going to just sit on Van Dijk all day, was he? He's a bit more intelligent than that. And Kwanzaa was up against him a lot of one-on-ones as well, and did really well. And just incredible, really, that he's emerged to be this option now. And again, you know, we keep talking about this. Do Liverpool need to sign a centre-half in the summer? I honestly don't know, because Kwanzaa is that good.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Are you that person who has everything? the coolest merch, and those must-have fan threads. Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Yeah, I did. There's a bit now, especially after yesterday. Why would you want to limit Jarrell Kwanzaa in any way? You know, he's coming through every single test. Liverpool are unbeaten in the league with Jarrell Kwanzaa playing. If you think about the games he's played as well, insane, really. And another kid who I loved, he was up from the challenge from the first minute and he rattled Bernardo Silva a few times, which made me love him even more if that was possible. But Connor Bradley, again, before sub, brilliant, wasn't he?
Yeah, he kind of, like, personality-wise, reminds me of just Robertson, really, on the right-hand side. He kind of loves to, like, get in duels and he loves winding people up and he's sort of, again, just brilliant. Not a game where he was able to massively influence things in terms of going forward. I mean, I know he slings that really good low crossing quite early on, and there's that one opportunity he has where he should maybe have had a shot, actually, and tries to cut the ball back. But everything he did defensively was just absolutely outstanding. And, you know, you just know that when he's starting games that he's going to lock down that side, you do not have to worry about it. I'm sort of reticent to criticise Trent Alexander-Arnold, but I do think he's better than him defensively. I think he's more intense in his defensive side of his game. I mean, Christ, he doesn't give you what Alexander-Arnold does on the ball. There's no doubt about that. I mean, very few players in world football can, but everything he does in the defending side of thing, I think, is superior. And his intensity in that position really does remind me of Andy Robertson. And I just think, Liverpool, again, you know, there's been calls, hasn't there, in the past for Liverpool to sign a right back and have some backup to Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think Bradley's been good enough to even make the argument, does Trent move into midfield now? He's been that good for Liverpool. So, another brilliant performance. And he's another one like Kwanzaa, just keeps passing every test, doesn't he? The biggest games, you throw them at him and he's easily good enough to be at that level. And, you know, another one again who was on loan in League One last season. It's just remarkable. It's testament to the coaching that he've got from Jurgen Klopp, but also how good they both are as footballers and characters as well, to just take this on and be able to sort of meet that level so easily.
Yeah, probably both of them probably changed the transfer thinking completely for the summer as well. And God knows what value do you put on them. And I did what people ignore this almost in a way because of the amount of performances he has. But Harvey Elliott is still essentially a kid, isn't he? And I honestly thought it was his best performance in a Liverpool shirt yesterday. He was great again, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's really coming into his own now. I think there's been times, haven't there, where we've seen weaknesses in his game where I think he's been caught out, sort of his lack of physicality has sort of counted against him at times. But I think what he's doing at the moment now is sort of learning how to get around that and to use his body in the best way. And you know, because you look at, I thought he reminds me a little bit of Bernardo Silva, actually, who obviously was up against yesterday, in terms of he can be that player for Liverpool. And they never think about Bernardo Silva being made to look like he's small or not strong, because the way he uses his body really well, or he doesn't end up in those physical duels because of the quality of his control and his touch, his ability to shield the ball. Elliott can absolutely be that for Liverpool. And I thought you saw that again. You know, he was a massive part of, I thought he did well in that sort of attacking role in the first half. And then when he drops back into midfield, again, big part of Liverpool dominating those positions, really, really good at getting himself into space in the number 10 position and then using the ball really, really well. He's just got everything. And I think the fact as well that performance came off the back. I mean, what's he on now? It's the last six games, 540 minutes, because of, I know he's been subbed off in a couple, but he's played extra time. And so over 540 minutes over the last six games and been a massive part of Liverpool, keeping this really good run of form going. And he's done it again yesterday against, probably the best team in the world. And you forget, because he's been around forever, he's a kid. He's as young as Kwanzaa. He's as young as Bradley. He's in that age bracket. And he's putting in performances like that. And he's been massive for this squad recently. And I thought, yesterday, another huge step forward for him. And it's kind of crazy to me as well that there've been times when he's had real criticism in the over the last couple of years, and people saying he's never going to make it for Liverpool. It's just absolutely laughable when you see how good he was yesterday and how good he has been recently. He was clearly a young player finding his way, and now I think he absolutely has found his way. And I think he's, you know, I think he's hit a level of form that he's going to be able to sustain going forward throughout his career now, because he's always been an elite level talent, and I think now he's going to start to show it consistently.
Yeah, his technical skills were amazing. It just, the amount of balls that were wrapped into him and the first touch was just perfect. Yes, like you say, very Bernardo Silva.
The biggest compliment you could pay him is that he could probably fit in that City team. Now, they sort of value technical quality slightly higher than maybe a Jurgen Klopp team does. And I think Elliot could absolutely fit into that, which is, yeah, that's how good he is.
Yeah, it's just insane. And despite that, and Harvey Elliott was unbelievable, in a game for Liverpool City and the quality of the midfielders they have, like you said, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, insane. We talked last week about Alexis McAllister maybe being in the team of the season. With the best midfielders in the league, he was the best midfielder on show, wasn't he, yesterday?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like I said, I think he's playing at a world-class level at the moment. He was just so good in everything he did yesterday, you know, dominant in terms of winning his challenges. He always gets about, wins the ball, nicking the ball for Liverpool. And then the quality he shows in possession, always dragging a player onto him to make sure that he can find a free man and pop the ball about. Little passes through the lines. His passing range is fantastic. And his composure in tight areas is massive for getting Liverpool out of pressure spots. And that's, you know, City try and set pressing traps constantly, but he could never really get close to him because he was that good on the ball. And as you say, the quality of City's midfield. I mean, that's the first game, since Rodri's first season, I haven't ever seen him look that ragged as he was yesterday. And it's because Liverpool were running all over them in midfield. They were absolutely killing them. And, you know, McAllister was the key man in that for me. But also Endo and Elliott, in terms of his supporting act, was so, so good in terms of swarming City and making it difficult for them. But then it's that combination of not just... It's not like Jurgen Klopp's early sort of era where it was all about physically bullying a team like City when they came to Anfield and just getting the ball up to the front three as quick as you possibly can. He actually mentioned it himself. That's the best that Liverpool have played in terms of playing through City, playing football through City rather than just win the ball, fire it forward. It was really sort of measured and controlled, and they just took City apart in midfield, when does that ever happen? I think Klopp was right to say that's probably the best that Liverpool have played against City, particularly in that second half performance, where they just ran through them. And Rodri looked terrible, and I've never seen that before. He is without doubt the best holding midfielder in the world, and Liverpool made him look daft for about 45 minutes yesterday, which is, yeah, that is no mean feat.
And like you say, McAllister leading it, but Elliot and him just controlled that midfield second half. They were at panic stations at times, City. It was unreal. And the panic stations were there. Luis Diaz, everything, and I mean everything but the goal, wasn't it? That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I think it's such a shame he didn't nick a winner, because I think his performance then, he would have been absolutely man of the match in many people's minds. Some of the... You know, I know he's... I've said this before, I think. He's never going to be quite the killer of a Sadio Mane, I think. But, you know, you've got to... And obviously in a game like that yesterday where the chances fall to him, you think, well, that's maybe not good enough. But I still think, you know, the system is set up in such a way that basically Nunez and Salah, those are the ones you want to be your killers. You have to provide some balance in that front three in terms of work rate down the flanks and in terms of ability to carry the ball at the pitch as well, not just be the finisher. And Diaz absolutely does that. I mean, I think he contests 14 ground duels yesterday, which he's always involved in that many because he's always involved in the game. His work rate is ridiculous. And as I say, progressing the ball with his dribbling and also his ability to work back and help the team out there, he's absolutely massive. And I thought he was a really, really important part of Liverpool playing well yesterday. It just is a shame he couldn't finish off the chances, though. I do think the one he kind of passes wide when he goes in one-on-one. I haven't seen it back, but I'm not sure if he was offside there, maybe. I hope so. I don't know. I thought he was phenomenal. And the missed chances shouldn't take away from that. You know, he has scored some important goals for Liverpool this season, and he will score some more. He may never hit Salah-like numbers, but you, if you've got Salah and Nunes in the same front three, you need a Diaz to balance it out. You need someone who's more of a midfielder than a centre-forward, and he absolutely is that. And I think you know, even with the missed chances yesterday, his value is absolutely massive.
No doubt. So, I mean, he's been on a great run recently as well. He's played a lot of minutes, like we say, with Harvey Elliott, and he will be gutted about yesterday, because he'll look at that one that he put wide in the first half when he was in the D and it seemed a great chance. Like you said, the two one-on-ones, even that one, there was the one where it was a great move, if you remember, and Nunes reversed it back to him. The first touch just went away. He will look at that and be obviously frustrated. But at the same time, I mean, that moment in the game in the 81st minute where we were a bit tired, I think it was. There was a bit of a dip before the end. He takes it from the edge of his area. I mean, that I can't remember a dribble like that, can you, where he just sort of just takes them on a dance. Kyle Walker's just stepping everywhere type of thing, falling over. And he wins the corner and he kind of falls down of exhaustion. But that was like watching prime Mane, wasn't it, realistically?
Yeah, the moment when he gets near the halfway line, he does a little cutback and keeps going. Yeah. And seemingly doesn't slow down at all to do it. No. I've never seen anything like that. It was brilliant. And again, like I say, I think that sums him up. His ability to get Liverpool up the pitch is a really underrated element of his game. And, you know, they go from being in their own half to winning a corner against City and piling the pressure on in that way. And as you say, in a moment where Liverpool, you know, maybe looking a little bit tired, City starting to get a bit better off the back of that Kovacic substitution, I think that helped them a little bit. And he just gets them up the pitch and he is just absolutely tireless. And I think, you know, for balance's sake, you do need him in the team a lot in these big games. And that's why he will be sort of, you know, he will be on the team sheet in these ones and will be going forward. And yeah, as I say, you know, some moments he'll look back on and regret, but I cannot be too critical of his performance because I thought he did everything he could in terms of, you know, work rate and as I say, helping Liverpool get out. And, you know, on a different day, one comes off his foot a bit better and he scores a goal and he's the hero. But it's just that's football, isn't it?
Yeah, just the way it works. Everything but the goal from Luis Diaz, literally. And you talked about balancing the team. As much as McAllister and Elliot are playing through, running the show, Endo was the supporting cast. I mean, he just gets through so much unheralded work. He was immense yesterday, wasn't he?
Yes, 16 million, by the way. Just crazy. I mean, like, you know, when Jurgen Klopp was sort of talking him up when he signed, I just thought it was, you know, to give him confidence and to say, you know, he's going to do a decent job for us. But I really couldn't see him being anything more than a sort of good squad option to get through the Europa League and help in that sense and give McAllister a rest maybe if he's playing the number six. But he's so much more than that. He absolutely has to be in Liverpool's starting midfield. He's genuinely playing at the level of Fabinho. And again, you know, that is not hyperbole. Liverpool dominated that City midfield yesterday. They've been dominant in midfield ever since Endo sort of got on this second half of the season run of form. He's just a massive player for them. And he's, you know, he wins every challenge he's involved in. He uses the ball really sensibly. I think, you know, he's not extremely expansive in his passing range, but he can pick some really nice passes right through the lines out at times as well. So, he's just a wonderful footballer. And you just think, how has he been playing for Stuttgart for so long? You know, being in relegation battles when he could have been playing at this level for the past few years. And you just hope that, you know, he's 30, that he's got maybe got, you know, another 2 or 3 years of this left in him, because he's been an absolute revelation. And I'm really loving watching him. And he will be, you know, he absolutely will be starting in Liverpool's midfield in all the games if he's fit between now and the end of the season, because he's utterly key to the way they play. And the fact that he did that yesterday against City just shows how good of a footballer he is.
Yeah, insane. And you're going to hate me for asking you this, but I think almost Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp have got the perfect nightmare soon with everything coming back, and fingers crossed we get no more injuries. I mean, Endo's there, McAllister's unbelievable, Szoboszlai's back. Harvey Elliott was immense even when he dropped into midfield yesterday. We're not even talking about Curtis Jones yet, and he's coming into the mix. Is it almost impossible to pick Liverpool's strongest midfield right now?
To be honest, I wouldn't even talk about it on the basis that you're going to probably think that we're going to curse them and they'll end up getting an injury, so he won't have to make that selection. So, but yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I'd have said Curtis Jones would have been an absolutely guaranteed starter yesterday, but then you look at the midfield on paper and you're like, who would have been left out? I mean, the argument would be Szoboszlai, because he's clearly not quite match fit, is he? I thought he was quiet yesterday. One of the rare Liverpool players who was, but you can absolutely give him a break on that because he needs to get his rhythm back up. So, you know, Curtis, I think, would have started instead of him. But I think that's, you know, in the long term, that's a good battle between them two. I mean, you absolutely, Endo has to start, McAllister has to start, and it's all about that last spot, isn't it? And I guess we'll just see in terms of whose form is best between now and the end of the season, in terms of who plays the most games. But it's going to be, hopefully it'll be a nice headache to have, and that Liverpool can have that fully fit squad that can, you know, that gives the manager those decisions to make, because it just hasn't happened enough this season, has it?
No, not at all. And yeah, you just fingers crossed with this break, maybe coming at the right time with everything. And I mean, we wax lyrical and there's so many positives about yesterday. There is just a few things I do want to ask you about, so you can get your booze in now, people, if you're listening. But it's important to ask. Couple of decisions. I mean, Konate not making it, and obviously the injury second half against Sparta. Have you any longer term concerns? We've alluded to this in the past, but it does just seem to keep picking up, these muscle injuries, more than anything. It's never ability with Konate. He's an unreal player, but it's the availability issue. Is this going to sort of build a bit for you?
It's an interesting one, really, because I almost feel I imagine he could have played, to be honest, because there's no way, if he's got a muscle issue that's keeping him out, and yet he could be in contention for United. And Klopp seemed really confident that he's going to be in contention for United, didn't even think it was going to be an issue. So, you know, that is on the real, real minor muscle issue, if it's enough to just keep you out of one game, basically. I it's almost like it's not there at all. I think they were maybe just protecting him. They don't want it to turn into anything bigger. And that decision was made, particularly with the situation Liverpool are in. Look, if we can leave him out for this game, but he can play for the rest of the season, then it's an absolute no-brainer. So I think they just didn't want to give themselves that decision to make in terms of putting him in the squad and having him available. Yeah. If there was even the tiniest little bit of risk attached to it. His ability to pick up injuries is a bit of a concern, in the sense that, you know, if he's going to be injured for long periods of season, going to consistently pick up muscle issues, then maybe Liverpool do need always a fifth choice centre-half knocking about, because if you get a situation like Matip being out, then you have to use Gomez at left-back or right-back, then you really are down to the bare bones like that, aren't you? So, that is a little bit of a worry in terms of his robustness, and maybe makes the argument that Liverpool could sign a fifth choice. Maybe that's a really young player who comes through and does that. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, the positive news is that Konate is not going to be out for long at all, and hopefully will be on the team sheet against Manchester United, which is, you know, when you see him go off and the way he sort of looked like he pulled up, you were worried that he was going to be out for a while. But, you know, he's missed the City game. Liverpool have come through with a decent result. Quanta played out of his skin, and Konate will be back soon. So you just got to take the positives where they are, and that's not too bad in the end, is it?
No doubts about it, and especially if he's back for United, it is minor. And it was a surprising selection for many. Andy Robbo on the bench. I mean, I know he wasn't great against Sparta. Were you surprised that Gomez came in at left back? Does that say anything more, or is it just rotation for you?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised, to be honest, because I think that decision had already been taken. I think the fact that Robertson plays the 90 in Sparta and then Joe Gomez comes off in the 45, I think that Jurgen had already thought, I'm going to play Joe Gomez at left back here. I think that decision had absolutely been taken, because what he would have done otherwise is to put Kostas in against Sparta Prague, and then you would have seen Robertson start against Manchester City. So I think that call, like I say, had already been made. It was a bit of a weird one, actually. Jurgen says, "Oh well, we couldn't start Robertson for three games on the bounce." Well, you know, you make that call in Prague, don't you, to start him and play him for the 90? So he clearly had it in mind, and I get the thinking there in terms of trying to stop Phil Foden cutting in on his left foot, same with Bernardo Silva. And I think, you know, in the end, I think that proved to be the right call, actually, because I think the both of those sort of struggled in the end. After that first 10 minutes or so, where Gomez was a little bit ropey, he kind of struggled to get into the game and really influence things. And he was always going in inside with Foden, and he really sort of kept him quiet, didn't he, and did a good job of that. So I think it was a right tactical call. I don't think it says anything really long-term about where Robertson's up to or anything. I think sort of too much is made, really, of the game he had against Sparta Prague. I don't think Liverpool played that well defensively at all, but a lot of that was basically Sparta's whole thing was, right, get the ball, ping it in behind as quickly as you can. And, you know, you can be as well set as you think you are and as good a defender, but you can't it's so hard to defend that space if people aren't getting out to block to stop the pass being made. So I don't think it says anything about Robertson or where he's up to now. Which sort of surprised me. He seems to be a bit of a whipping boy in social media at the moment, I think, Robertson. And people thought, I think he's unbelievable. I think he's had great games this season. I thought when he came on against City actually yesterday, I thought he was brilliant. He creates three chances. He brings that extra attacking balance that maybe Gomez doesn't provide when he's there. So, I think it was just a tactical call. And I think, you know, justified by the way the game played out and almost really paid off with Robertson coming on, adding that width late on. Liverpool, that really helped Liverpool get another second wind and nearly go on and win it. So, you know, I think the manager got that call absolutely right.
There always tends to be one whipping boy amongst the fans, doesn't he? And yeah, maybe it's his turn. Maybe it will stay his turn for a while. Who knows? And I mean, God, I can't believe it's still unbelievable. I'm still processing it myself. And the coming week, Sparta second leg, which does, I mean, it's a dead rubber, essentially. We're looking at it now, isn't it? 5-1 from the first leg at Anfield. And then United, two cup games. Is it as simple for you as saying, play anyone, play the kids or whoever's fit for the cup or the second leg of the Europa, sorry, because it's all about United next weekend. Is that how you're seeing these two?
Yeah, I think there's a few we'll need to sit this one out just through the work they got through against City. I mean, you know, I kind of wouldn't like to see Endo anywhere near it, for example. He's someone who just absolutely grafts, doesn't he? And same with McAllister as well. I think it was, you know, the call to go quite strong in certain areas against Sparta Prague was sort of justified with the way that, well, this has been turned into a non-event, hasn't it? And also then Liverpool backed that up with a great performance against City as well. So absolutely was justified to go strong in that. And now they've got a free hit here before they go into United and they can get a decent rest in and go into United absolutely full strength ahead of the international break. So I think that was the right call in terms of that. And I think with the team now against Sparta Prague for this second leg, I think we're just going to see sort of, there's a few players who, you know, yes, some kids, absolutely, I think, to make some changes there. But there's a few who need a bit of rhythm, don't they? I mean, Szoboszlai needs to start for me. He needs to get some rhythm back. You know, he looked off it against City and absolutely understandable with the amount of football he's missed. So give him another game, give him another 60 minutes. Let's see if we can get him back up to speed as quickly as possible. I think Gakpo needs a goal. Be good for him to get a goal if he can. So, you know, I think his confidence looks a little bit shot at the moment. And so we'd love to see him back amongst the goals if he can get an opportunity to start. And then, you know, your likes of Bobby Clark could start, which would be good. I would love to see Jadon Dans in the team if possible, if he's recovered from that concussion. So could be a really good team, it's sort of a good mix. And it'd be an interesting one to see what he goes with. And I think it'd be an interesting team and a lot to sort of be, you know, to take interest in amongst it.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Rhythm will be a key one. You'd fancy even Mo Salah, because he didn't look happy at full time, understandably, in the sense that Mo Salah wants to play every game. So he might well be thinking rhythm, get into this and go from there. No doubts it will be interesting to see. But yeah, all eyes moving towards United and the Cup that way as well. And we're this far into the podcast, we've not even talked about it. It's been off the pitch, as you know, the buzz all week. The Michael Edwards story, it kind of went quiet and then it's back. And now it's really back, isn't it? I mean, from the latest reports that Michael Edwards is in, as you call it, final negotiations with FSG. There's a little bit of uncertainty about what is his role going to be exactly? If is it FSG? Is it Liverpool? And also Richard Hughes, the current sporting director at Bournemouth, who seems apparently set to take that role, close links with Michael Edwards. I mean, what can you give us around this on the latest? Because there's a lot of excitement. But then the thing I'm also thinking is there's a lot of excitement for things we still seem unsure about, so to speak, and how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I think this is basically, we're very close to a done deal on this now. I think that, you know, there's been a sort of an outline agreement in place and now it's sort of finishing touches. So we're in that area. I think it would take something miraculous for this to not come off now. And I think with the Michael Edwards one, it's going to be interesting to see what the actual role is and what that looks like. I mean, an interesting thing is I don't think it's going to be a Liverpool role in the sense that I think it is going to be something within FSG that where his main area of oversight is Liverpool. And I think that's because Liverpool are actually directing inquiries about this to FSG when contacted about it. So I think that's kind of interesting. And you get no comment from that side at the moment, by the way. So they're really keeping the cards close to the chest, but we absolutely expect that, to be honest. But I think it is going to be a role within FSG, and then Richard Hughes to come in and take that sporting director role. And again, you know, I don't want to get too excited around sort of football executives. And, I always point out that Liverpool's business last summer, when they didn't have Michael Edwards, they didn't have Julian Ward, was still really, really good. You look at the signings they made, you know, Endo, the absolute archetypal FSG signing, McAllister for 35 million, like unbelievable business. Liverpool is still capable of doing that. But I do think Michael Edwards is clearly a really savvy football operator, and he was around for a great period in Liverpool's history. He's clearly a really smart man who's, you know, great. It'd be great to get him back on board in a bigger capacity. And obviously, if he thinks Richard Hughes is a good technical director or sporting director or whatever his title ultimately ends up being, then I trust his judgment on that front. And I think what it says is it'll be good to get it sorted soon, in terms of, because we've spoken before about the fact that, you know, moving towards summer business, you need to get going on that front. But it also presents to any potential new manager, say Xabi Alonso, look at the structure we're putting in place here. Michael Edwards is an absolute world-class in his field and has been in the past. We're putting the structure in place. You've got this incredible squad that you would inherit already. You know, Liverpool is set up for future success, even after Jurgen Klopp. And I think so. It's a relief, really, to see sort of movement coming on that. We did always say we thought it'd be sorted by March, and it seems to be. I expect some sort of confirmation of some news around that in this week at the absolute latest. So, yeah, it's good that it's moving, and I think it's to be celebrated that Liverpool recognise that you can't really replace Jurgen Klopp and everything he does for Liverpool. You need to have an incredible structure in place, and they're clearly making steps towards that. And hopefully these are the right appointments to take Liverpool forward.
No doubt. Yeah, we are expecting news this week and full confirmation of what exactly that role is. And it does link to off the field, but this is a big few weeks. Like you said, it was the 31st of March, so that's coming for our next league game. Injuries-wise, we know we're hearing Konate is supposed to be back for the United game. Are we expecting players to be coming back? Because you know I'm alluding to like Trent, Jones. Are we expecting to see players in training quite soon? Is that the latest?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are basically post-international break. I mean, it was interesting actually. Pep Linders kind of gave Curtis seemingly a chance of being around maybe this week. But we'll have to see. I mean, that is so... With injuries, it's kind of hard to predict, isn't it? Because they do a lot of assessment day by day and see how the pain's feeling, things like that, how it's healing up, how quickly it heals. And, you know, it's impossible for a four-week injury to make the prediction. They'll be bang back on 4 weeks or whatever. So it's difficult to say. So maybe, Curtis, maybe we'll get some good news on that. Maybe he could be around that timeline, as Linda said. Gravenberch is one who, you know, it wouldn't be an absolute shock if he was back around the back end of this week to training. Whether that's enough to get him involved in United, we'll have to see. He said to me, I wrote a story last week about that the likeliest timeline was considered that he'd be back after the international break, but it wasn't absolutely ruled out that he'd be around this week. So we'll see how that goes. Again, as I say, he's judging the pain, seeing how they feel. They want to take risks now. But the good news is, you know, you'd expect after the international break, Curtis Jones, Ryan Gravenberch, Trent Alexander-Arnold's going to be back. And then I think Alisson and Jota maybe a little bit after that then maybe. But it's looking pretty good, isn't it? Obviously, Konate back for United, hopefully, as well. So What a boost that is, and to not have a league game now till the Brighton game, you know, the ability to get players back and hopefully going into that last run in now with a really strong looking squad, it would just be huge. It gives you the ability to win games from the bench more as well, which is something Liverpool did a lot early in the season. So it's looking really, really good for Liverpool at the moment, and hopefully just try and avoid picking up some more injuries if possible.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be great if we can get those players back for the next league game, especially people rehabbing. And we even had the good news, didn't we, that Mo Salah is not going to go on international duty for Egypt. We've got to look at that as a positive. So, yeah, despite the draw and people have their feelings, it genuinely is a groundswell of a positive feeling, quite rightly, around the club. And we come, as ever, to the questions that have come in from the viewers. And I like this one. It's an interesting one. I'll put this to you, David. No hesitation. How many trophies do you think we're finishing this season with, and why?
I'm gonna say two. I think I'm not sure. I mean, obviously got the League Cup now, and I think they'll definitely win the Europa League. I still make City favourites to the Premier League. I've been scarred too many times. You know, they're so good in the running, aren't they? And you know, one result can throw it. You know, it'd be nice if Liverpool just get the breaks this time and get the look and can get over the line where City have maybe sometimes had the odd bit of fortune. If Liverpool could get that, it'd be great. But I wouldn't be shocked if they ended with three. I think they'll absolutely will win the Europa League. It's not a question in my mind that they'll win that. FA Cup might be difficult, but I think they'll win two. It'd be really nice if it was three with the Premier League, though, wouldn't it? I wouldn't rule out all four. Jürgen Klopp's a joke what he's been doing with this squad recently. And as you said about the players coming back, you know, Liverpool are going to have options. So, you know, I'm not absolutely ruling that out. But my gut, and as you said, with no hesitation, I'd maybe just say two now to play it safe.
And I get that. I could keep praying for all four, but I can fully understand two at the same time. And someone tweeted the other day, which was quite good, we've all still got PTSD, point a point PTSD, isn't it, type of thing. So, yeah, that way. I mean, this one I thought was a good question. Harvey Elliott does feel like he's gone up a level recently, and maybe that's my phrase in there. What do you think is the big difference in his recent performances from the start of the season? And we know he's been brilliant still at the start of the season. We've talked about him, but he's been an element of super sub, hasn't it, for the large season, and now it just feels in the last few weeks it has gone up a level. What do you put that down to, if anything?
I do wonder if Alexis McAllister's having quite a good influence on him, actually, in terms of, I think one of the big problems he had when he started games at the start of the season, he was always good off the bench, wasn't he? He was always in games where Liverpool were looking to dominate late on and they were looking for a late winner. He'd come on and he'd, you know, Liverpool would have a lot of possession and he'd find those little pockets. What tended to happen when he was starting games, I felt, was that he was really struggling to influence things and finding that, you know, in where the games were a little bit more even slightly in the starting period rather than Liverpool pushing late on. He maybe wouldn't see as much of the ball as you'd like. He wouldn't find himself in the positions. But I think what maybe is happening at times now is McAllister, and actually Endo as well, is really good at this. He's firing those little balls through the lines into the number 10 position. Now, Harvey Elliott is always hanging around there, whether he starts on the right or he starts in midfield. They're always trying to pick up those little pockets in the number 10 space. And I think Liverpool are maybe just getting better at finding him there now. And then once he's got the ball there, his touch is usually good and he's really, really good on the ball. So it's almost a change in how Liverpool are finding him more than anything. But he's definitely he's having more influence now. He's seeing the ball a lot more. And you get him on the ball, good things tend to happen because he's an absolutely quality player. And I think, you know, as I say, I think he can be Liverpool's sort of Bernardo Silva going forward, which, you know, I know he's hated by Liverpool fans, but what a player Bernardo Silva is. And if Harvey Elliott can sort of mimic that and go to that level, then, you know, what an asset he's going to be for Liverpool going forward.
No doubt. He's definitely changed that conversation around super sub to possible starter now as well. It does feel a bit different in the last few weeks. I did think that was a good question. And I suppose the final one, and I think we kind of alluded to this a bit earlier, he's done it recently. Is Alexis McAllister in our world-class bracket of players now, would you say?
Yeah, I think I said this on my YouTube channel yesterday, actually. I think he's playing at a world-class level now, no doubt about it. I mean, if you can mix it with the midfielders that he did yesterday and come out on top and be arguably the best midfielder on the pitch with that amount of quality around you, then you clearly are a world-class footballer. I think there's no question about that. And I look back to me saying that I preferred him in the number six and just laugh now. That was so badly wrong. You know, absolutely, we'll reassess my opinions based on the evidence that I see. And he's been world class since he's gone into that advanced position. And I think one of the problems again early in the season was that he wasn't seeing enough of the ball whenever he started in that position. But Liverpool, absolutely, again, getting used to where he wants the ball, where to find him, how to get him on it. And sometimes he's dropping a little bit deeper as well and making a two with Endo, which again, to get on the ball, which I really, really like how that works. Them two as a pivot in possession at times. And that is allowing him to influence the games much more than he maybe was when he first moved into that eight position. And I just think he's the man through which all Liverpool's play goes at the moment. He, as I said, I think he's Liverpool's most important player. And I think by that definition, absolutely, yeah, he's a world-class footballer.
Yeah, he's so key at the moment. He feels like one of the ones you've got to keep fit, doesn't he? When you talk about Van Dijk at the back, him into the middle, he is the main man at the moment. No two ways about it. I mean, ladies and gents, we have been around the houses. We have asked David literally everything that you wanted us to. We've gone into depth on City, United. I mean, the four trophies dream is still alive. I'll let you decide if City are the favourites and how you think it will go, but largely positive. So all that leaves me to do as ever is say, David, thank you for your time and your insight. It's much appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
And ladies and gents, that was another Media Matters Anfield Index.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.